time to talk business. Let's go to our business correspondent today, which is Rebecca Stevenson, Stuff's business editor in the Auckland studio. Morena.
Good morning.
Now, shall we start with McDonald's? And this sense of consensual relationships in the office have recently been in the news in light of the CEO being sacked. Now, this was for having a consensual relationship with another worker.
Yeah, that's right. So McDonald's CEO Steve Easterbrook, well, former CEO, I should say, Steve Easterbrook, had what has been termed a short-term and consensual relationship with a McDonald's employee. The result of this has been that there was an internal investigation at McDonald's. A legal team was brought in, and they found that Easterbrook had actually violated the company's policy, which guarded against fraternization, particularly between someone who's in a position of power and an employee. So he's lost his job for having this consensual relationship.
So in this particular case, there was a clear policy. Lots of places, it's perhaps not quite so clear cut. And lots of people do meet their partner at work.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we spend an increasing amount of time at work. You know, it's not uncommon that people do embark on relationships at work. I think where a lot of companies draw the line is where there is a reporting line, or in this case, you know, obviously he was the CEO. And McDonald's and many corporates like to sort of espouse that they have values and like to, you know, induce customers to support them because of their values. And so they had a clear policy that people who were in a position of power could not have relationships, intimate relationships with people that would report to them. And so as he's been found to have breached this, you know, and he was gone.
So this is much more about that power dynamic rather than whether it's something that is sort of technically morally wrong.
That's right. I mean, Steve Easterbrook is not in a relationship. He wasn't having an affair on his wife or anything like that. We obviously don't know anything really about the woman that he was having a relationship with. So there were not even so much some moral issues there for this relationship. It was just that the company had a clear policy to guard against these sort of intimate relationships.
What can the difficulty be if people are in a relationship while at work?
Look, we've had some really interesting cases at Stuff. You know, we've gotten really far down the track with stories exactly about this. You know, we did an investigation into a organisation in New Zealand where a new CEO had apparently embarked on an affair with a young woman in the office who was a new graduate. This relationship made the people in that office feel incredibly uncomfortable. They saw the closeness between them. And then in the resulting decisions that the CEO made, this woman was promoted. Other staff felt that she had an unfair advantage effectively against them in having this incredibly close relationship. And so when it starts to flow into decisions, unfairness, conflict of interest, it obviously becomes, you know, incredibly difficult.
I guess also there could be a tension that is perhaps not welcome. And like you say, we spend an awful lot of time at work, and that could be with someone that perhaps you could say they're stalking you, or they're paying you attention that is not welcome.
That's right. And obviously, again, it's that power relationship that makes it incredibly fraught and difficult. If someone above you is interested in you sexually, you know, you can obviously gauge that that's going to be detrimental to your own career if you turn down those advances. And I think that's one of the key things that's been teased out in the era of Me Too reporting, is it's where there's this imbalance in the power dynamic where someone else has influence or control over you, your career, and can influence decisions about what's going to happen to you. You can end up in a really untenable situation where you're sort of flying blind, where there's a puppet master above you and feel that you need to sort of court that relationship in order to have, you know, decent treatment in the workplace.
What about in situations where it's people who are essentially on the same level or perhaps work in different parts of the company that wouldn't impact on each other? Is that sort of seen to be okay, or does that undermine teamwork in a sort of greater sense of the word?
Well, I think that's sort of the really interesting conundrum. There is actually, you know, the human rights legislation which protects people's relationships that you can't be discriminated against on the basis of a relationship. So, I mean, I'd love to see a court case come up because of that and see that really tested. And then the other issue, of course, is how it makes other employees feel around you. Because employers obviously have an obligation to have a safe and conducive working environment for all employees. So even if, you know, perhaps there would be jokes and things like that that could happen between the two parties that were having a consensual relationship where there wasn't a power imbalance, you know, if that did make other employees feel uncomfortable, unsafe, you know, they could very well raise a complaint about that. That actually did happen in the case that we investigated, where I think it was about 6 or 7 employees of this organization raised complaints about this relationship. There was an investigation undertaken. The legal independent people that came in found that there was no wrongdoing. So these people ended up in this position whereby they had raised these complaints and then effectively had to leave because it had been found that, yeah, it made them feel uncomfortable, but there was nothing actually legal or any breach of legislation that they could pin it around.
They couldn't just be banned.
Well, this organisation didn't have any specific policy guarding against that sort of relationship. So, I mean, obviously, different employers have different contracts and some would have those sort of catch-all contracts about code of conduct and how you have to conduct yourself when you're at work. And other organisations will have those specific policies whereby they just flat out ban it. And those bans are a lot more common overseas than they are in New Zealand. In the US, obviously, with this case with McDonald's, they had this. And that is quite common at those big corporates. In New Zealand, it's not as common.
So what happens? Do people just kind of keep these kind of things really under wraps?
I mean, I think most of us know of times when people in our offices have been having relationships. The secrecy itself, I think, could potentially be an issue because people need to be able to judge, I think, what's going on around them and when decisions are being made. You know, maybe someone gets to go on a trip or a couple gets to go on a trip together or something like that. I feel like the organization would probably need to know that just to ensure that there are no, you know, uncomfortable situations that can arise. Obviously, a relationship could turn to harassment. You know, it only takes one incident in a even consensual relationship where parties could start to feel differently about comments that are made to them. And if it's made in the workplace, in the work environment, you know, that's a really incredibly fraught road. I mean, I'm personally not comfortable with that sort of thing going on in the office, but we've had some really interesting debates in the business team about this where other people, you know, and in the office have had relationships with people at work and thought it was fine. So, you know, I guess there is that personal element to it too. But when it starts to flow into the work and other people feel uncomfortable or it tips over into behaviour that's not acceptable anyway and under general sort of code of conduct, then that's obviously going to create problems.
Employment's not static either. So I suppose there's always the situation where someone's working at a company and then their partner's hired in, and that could change a whole load of dynamics.
Yeah, and again, you know, that can be incredibly uncomfortable for people around you, but there's not necessarily anything wrong with it. I mean, you see a lot of businesses that are owned by man and wife founders, you know, and you can get these situations where the couple splits and the damage to the business and the employees can be huge, you know, or if they're having a bad day, you know, and then they come to the office and talk about things that are going on, you know, that can obviously make people feel incredibly uncomfortable. And I think that's kind of a New Zealand thing in a lot of ways as well. We do often all know each other and we do have a lot of small businesses in New Zealand. So the chances of people having those close relationships are probably more common and frequent.
Now let's talk also about annual leave. When is more annual leave actually just losing other types of leave?
Yeah, so we had a really interesting example last week when the Bank of New Zealand announced its financial results. And as part of its financial results announcement, it talked about the fact that they were going to have increased leave up to 6 weeks. Now, almost immediately as the story came out, we got a flood of emails and phone calls from people who worked at BNZ saying, hang on a minute, that's not exactly right. What has actually happened is domestic leave, I think they called it at BNZ, was which they had 10 days of, had just been sort of lumped in with annual leave. So instead of people having annual leave and domestic leave, they just had 6 weeks of annual leave.
How does that work on the balance sheet, though? Because obviously you may not take domestic leave, but that's, annual leave, yeah, you do have to take.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, leave is a huge liability for any business, and a lot of businesses, you know, especially if you've got thousands of employees like BNZ does, they'll be closely managing their leave. They don't want to carry over that liability from year to year. So, yeah, they do make people take leave and things like that. In the press release, it was a big red flag about this, where they said this was cost neutral. So I think my understanding from their domestic leave was that it wasn't just like parental leave, as other organizations might call it, where you'd see it as being looking after a sick child. They specifically had it called domestic leave. So it was, I understand, quite broad into who could take that leave. And, you know, as many people who said to us, we think this is kind of garbage from BNZ, we had other people who said, hey, this is great because now more people can take that leave. So I think, you know, there will be a cost there for the company, but they had weighed it up and decided it was cost neutral. So they felt they weren't going to lose anything or have to pay out more for it, and that perhaps they were going to get some good feedback from this. I think one of the reasons that people were really cross about this at BNZ was that some other entitlements had been lost at the same time around these sort of bonuses. So for them, it was a little jarring to have BNZ out there sort of patting itself on the back for giving this increased leave, which was actually, you know, revenue neutral. They weren't going to pay any more money. And then also taking away some other specific entitlements for staff.
And this, I suppose, is how it ended up being called by some as corporate sleight of hand. How do other big companies deal with leave?
We are seeing more flexibility coming through on leave. I think, you know, we know that Kiwis work quite long hours. And I think there is a sort of a general feeling that, gosh, you know, we're working crazy hours all the time. So businesses are offering more flexibility and they are offering different inducements around leave. You know, we saw Westpac who introduced a thing where you could purchase annual leave. So you could just buy some more in addition to the standard leave allowance. And then Perpetual Guardian is probably one of the most famous companies in New Zealand. I mean, they introduced the four-day week, and they are now part of a global campaign of promoting the four-day week where staff just work sort of longer hours. So I think it's probably less about leave and more about flexibility. And instead of just having these sort of standard contracts where you get 4 weeks leave because that's what the law is and businesses adhering just strictly to the law, they're introducing other offers as well to try and make their workplaces more attractive for staff.
Thank you very much. That is Stuff's business editor, Rebecca Stevenson.